The Movie Files, a podcast featuring behind-the-scenes tales of motion picture history. Sponsored by Aplomb Publishing. Visit us on the web at www.aplombpublishing.com.
Welcome once again to The Movie Files. I'm John William Waller, your host. Thank you for tuning in to Have and Have Not This Time, which is the title of the episode. For anyone who's not heard of the film, it is the very first film in which Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall co-star together, which made movie history. I have gone back to the 1940s too much, so it's kind of fun or interesting to kind of mix it up a little bit. I find that I sometimes get stuck in my kind of own little bent of the things that I'm interested in or the things that I kind of watch a lot. This film is from 1944. Warner Brothers. Humphrey Bogart was a big Warner Brothers actor, probably one of the bigger kind of Warner Brothers stars, aside from someone like Betty Davis, I guess. He was one of the lead, I guess, actors or leading men for Warner Brothers for many years. To Have and Have Not is actually based on an Ernest Hemingway book, not one of the best ones from what I have heard. I have not read the book, but it is directed by Howard Hawks, who also produced the film along with Jack Warner. And Howard Hawks and Ernest Hemingway were good friends, and I believe from what I'd read at one point during a kind of fishing trip, Hawks had tried to persuade Hemingway to write him a story, an original story, and I don't think he would do it. So he eventually ended up grabbing this idea of doing this book because he always believed that he could probably take even the worst of Ernest Hemingway stories and make a good movie out of it. So he certainly attempted to do that in this case. I think in the long story or the long haul of all of the Humphrey Bogart movies that are out there, this probably is not one of the ones that, I don't know, maybe it is. It doesn't seem to be, you know, if you're thinking about things like Maltese Falcon and Casablanca and Treasure of Sierra Madre and, you know, all the other ones that he did, Key Largo being another great one. This one is, it's in there in kind of one of his quintessential films, but we're kind of, you know, one of the kind of top 10 or so, maybe or so, but probably not at the top of the list. The only thing that obviously is noted about it that makes it relatively important, and certainly in the life of Humphrey Bogart, was that he would meet Lauren Bacall on this set, and that is an interesting story. And I'm going to talk a little bit about it. I think that was what kind of ignited the film and made it do as well as it did. They got a lot of press for being a couple. Around the time of the release, or after it, certainly in the next movie, The Big Sleep, which was probably, you know, one of their bigger or more famous films together. But this film did quite well. It did establish them with chemistry, and it cost something like, you know, $1.5 million to make, but made, you know, in upwards of $5+ million, so it actually did do well for Warner Brothers, and they were happy with it, happy enough to kind of continue the association of Lauren Bacall and Humphrey Bogart. Bacall was new to Hollywood at the time. She had not appeared in a movie. She was actually a model, and which was not surprising. I think a lot of people know that. But if you don't know a ton about the story, she was originally modeling in New York, doing a lot of things. Like Harper's Bazaar was one of her big, I guess, places she worked, and she was paid for as a model and was appearing in the magazine and on the cover a lot. And there was a movie being made in Hollywood by Columbia at the time, and it was going to star Rita Hayworth, and it was called Cover Girl. And Columbia had an idea for the film, and in addition to the star, they wanted to cast a series of other cover girls in the film as kind of extras and backups and kind of, you know, in and around the movie that she would, the star, that Rita Hayworth would interact with. And so they looked, obviously, to existing models to cast them in these spots. One of the women that they looked to was Lauren Bacall. She, as a Harper's Bazaar cover girl, was one of the key people that they really were interested in getting, and Columbia wanted to bring her out to appear in this film, and it was the only film that they really were looking to her to do. But Columbia had a requirement or a deal. The way that they worked is that if she signed on to do the movie, she would sign a one-year contract with Columbia. And at the same time, she had gotten some other interests from some other parties in Hollywood about potentially coming out and doing some screen tests or kind of trying her hand at making movies, because she was a beautiful woman and kind of fit in kind of the, you know, other leading ladies at the time that they were casting, in the Virginia Mayos, and even, I guess, to some extent, you know, where Grace Kelly would appear and things like that, that you were looking for those kinds of, you know, faces you know, I don't know, Carol Lombard would be an example, or Rita Hayworth is another example. She had a face that would certainly do well on the movie screen. So one of the other people that was interested in working with her was the producer, director, Howard Hawks. And Hawks had someone on his team contact her, or through her modeling agency, to inquire about her coming out to Hollywood to do a screen test. And you know, obviously Lauren Bacall was 18 years old at the time, and new to all of this. And she had to kind of weigh her options and think about what her best choices would be. And somebody, and I don't remember who it was, some kind of advisor, one of the people that she'd spoken to or looked to for advice, told her, you know, of her choices, because I think she even had Howard Hughes at one point was another kind of producer who was interested in working with her. And but some of these offers or these interests were not necessarily for actual work. They were for Howard Hawks, for instance. He really just wanted her to come out and do a screen test, and he would pay her a salary of, I don't know what it was, like $50 a week or something, to do the screen test. And during the period of year or whatever, as he would kind of think about whether he would cast her in a movie or not. So he agreed to do that, but she had no kind of film offer from him specifically. He just said if he liked what he saw on the screen, then that the camera captured, she might end up in his movie. But someone had suggested to her that that was probably the better way to go, that, you know, her starring in a movie or appearing in a movie like CoverGirl with Rita Hayworth would just mean that she was one of 10, you know, pretty women in the background while all the cameras and attention was being focused on Rita Hayworth, and that wouldn't really give her as much of a chance to shine, and maybe it would be better for her to try her hand at with Howard Hawks, where he could actually pull out a performance and actually she could, you know, potentially turn into a star on her own right. So she decided that was the best way to go, and she canceled the Columbia option, or didn't do that, and she went out to Hollywood and did a screen test with Howard Hawks. And lo and behold, he liked what he saw, and he brought her out to Warner Brothers, because that's where he did a lot of his work. And he was actually working with, Humphrey Bogart at the time. I think he had finished up Casablanca at the time and was doing some work. But she had met him. Howard Hawks had talked about casting her opposite someone like a Cary Grant or a Humphrey Bogart, and she, Lauren Bacall, thought, wow, you know, Cary Grant, that would be fantastic. And Humphrey Bogart, she really didn't know then, thought kind of yuck, she wasn't really that interested in working with him. But lo and behold, I don't know how long later, a few months or something went by, she got cast into this new movie, To Have and Have Not. Her first scene was a scene where she walks into the room. She actually enters the doorway, asks for some matches to light her cigarette. Humphrey Bogart tosses her matches. She catches it, lights her cigarette, and that's the scene. She was apparently very, very nervous during the scene and couldn't stop shaking between her head and her hand. But to stop her head from shaking, she found this trick to kind of tilt her head forward, so she kind of looked kind of so her chin was almost touching her neck, and that look became very famous for her and kind of established. And the only reason that look happened was simply because she was nervous and trying to control her head from shaking. But she ended up having a relationship with Humphrey Bogart that worked really well during the filming. They got along very well. She found him much more friendly than she expected. She found him very supportive as a co-star. He knew that she was new to this, and he spent a lot of effort and attention to kind of make her feel at ease and help her prepare and help her do her the best that she could. And she found that to be the thing that really drew her into Humphrey Bogart. And Humphrey Bogart was actually married at the time. It was the third of, I think, his four marriages, because Picard will be his last. But he was married at the time. He was in, I guess you would call it, an unhappy marriage. And during this time, he would begin a relationship with Lauren Bacall. I don't know how far into the production, midway through the production, I guess you could say, because he started kind of, he apparently, the way she tells it in her own kind of autobiography, she said that one night, you know, kind of as they were ending the kind of end of the day's work, he kind of came up to her, and I don't know where she was sitting in her dressing room or something, and he kind of was wishing her a good night, and out of nowhere, he bent down and kissed her. And she was shocked and surprised by it, because he wasn't like that at all. It was a very strange thing for him to do. But he gave her the box of matches that they had used in the set, or a box of matches. I don't know if they were the box, but a box of matches, and asked her to write down her phone number. And then later on that night, he actually called her. And that would begin their relationship, and they would start to kind of have these phone conversations, and they would start to have lunch. And before you know it, they were kind of involved in this kind of, you know, I guess, extramarital affair for him. She was, you know, 18, turning 19 years old at the time, and he was 44. But they would finish making the film. He was married to a woman by the name of Mayo Metho. She had been an actress for, I don't know, a number of earlier years in the, I don't know if it was in the 20s or into the early 30s. She would give up her career when she, to marry Bogart, give up her career sort of for him. But they would end up in kind of a very difficult kind of marriage, a drunken brawl sort of a marriage. By all accounts, he said he started drinking more heavily because he was married to her, and he needed it just to get through the marriage. And she drank all the time as well, and they would get into these huge knockdown, drag-out fights, and she would throw things at him. And so during this time, he would end up beginning this affair with Lauren Bacall. And people thought it wasn't going to come of much. There was a lot of speculation. There were a little bit of rumors in Hollywood. They would see them at lunch together, and people on the set knew. And Howard Hawks eventually figured out what was going on. He pulled Lauren Bacall aside during the making of the film, told her to stop it, that it was a mistake, that she shouldn't do this, that she had fallen for this guy and she shouldn't do that, that as soon as the movie was over, he was going to drop her and move on. And this was just the way Hollywood was, and she would be smart not to ruin her career by doing this. And Humphrey Bogart got wind of that. He wasn't happy, but he understood. But they kind of worked through the film, and their chemistry came through on the film. The film was finished. It did quite well. In fact, from what I had read, the story originally went that in the film, Lauren Bacall's character was not going to be involved with Humphrey Bogart. He was actually to be involved with one of the other kind of actors in the film. There was a woman by the name of Dolores Moran who played another supporting role in the film, and his character was supposed to end up with her. But once they started seeing the kind of rushes and scenes, they sort of adjusted the film to kind of create the romance between Bogart and Bacall. Obviously that would be a good move. They finished the film. I don't remember how long it went on. It was several months, go their separate ways, I guess you could say. Lauren Bacall, again, was under contract to Howard Hawks at the time. He was going to do the next film, which was The Big Sleep, I think, and that was, they would be working together again. But during the period between the films, they would be apart. Humphrey Bogart had a boat in Newport Beach, I guess it was, and he liked to spend time on his boat, and he would use that as an opportunity to get away from his wife, actually, to And so there were a couple of moments where they would actually meet on his boat to kind of have time together. But she was frustrated because she didn't get to see and spend any time with him during the day or even in the evening because he was married. Humphrey Bogart assured her he would call her Slim. That was the nickname that he gave her, which was actually the name that she was called in the film. And she would refer to him as Steve, which was his character in the film. So that was sort of their kind of nicknames for each other. He assured her that, you know, she was not just a passing fling, that he wanted definitely something more. And it was actually during the big sleep that he would ultimately end the marriage to his wife to marry Lauren Bacall. I think it was in 1945. I think it was about February. I think the movie came out in October of 1944 was the release of To Have and Have Not. Again, it starred Walter Brennan was in the film, Dolores Moran, Hoagy Carmichael. It is sort of like a Casablanca film. It's got kind of some similarities. Some critics certainly said that it was just kind of another telling of the same Casablanca story. Humphrey Bogart plays kind of a boat. I don't know what you'd call him, boating guy, a ship. You know, he owned a fishing boat, and he was kind of being kind of coerced or asked to kind of help. The story takes place in Martinique, there was an attempt to kind of during the French Resistance during the war to rescue people and save people. So there was some similarity to the story in Casablanca in the same way, except for in this instance, Humphrey Bogart was operating a fishing boat, and in Casablanca it was a hotel. So that was one of the kind of things that kind of set the movie down, I guess, in terms of reviews. But it was released in October of 1944, and they would start work on their next film shortly after that. It was during the making of The Big Sleep that Humphrey Bogart would leave his wife, which I think was in February of 1945. And then they would get married in May of that year. And Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall would have a successful marriage. They would remain married for the remainder of his life. He would die in 1957, so they would be married for a good 12 years. He would die of cancer. She was, again, very young because when they got married, I think she was about 19, and he was 44, 45 years old. So they would have a child together. And, it was a storybook Hollywood romance. It still is. Even today, I think Bogart and Bacall, in terms of as a kind of actors on the big screen, as kind of pairings, when you think about people like Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire, you know, and Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn, Bogart and Bacall really stand up there as kind of, you know, a pair that kind of are synonymous with each other. And they would do a number of other films together. But To Have and Have Not was the first of them. And it's an interesting movie. I mean, if you like Humphrey Bogart, he plays a very similar character in a lot of these films. So he was smart enough to know where his kind of, you know, sweet spot was as an actor. And then certainly directors like Howard Hawks and producers like Jack Warner knew how to put him in the best light. I mean, he is definitely ranked as one of the greatest male movie stars in movie history still today, and for that very good, very, very reason. So that's a bit of a look at To Have and Have Not. Thank you for tuning in.